Hello and welcome to, what are we at now, David? Fifth episode?
How about that?
Fifth episode of Teal Time with David Teal. I'm Jonathan Heater, alongside David Teal, back for duty this week after a...
Welcome home.
Thank you. It was not a bad trip out west.
Well, honeymoon should be that way. They should be memorable, and it sounds like yours was.
Now, I have caught up a little bit on what happened while I was gone, but I will tell you that there were nary a TV in Yellowstone or Grand Teton, so I did not see any action live. I saw the highlights of the thrilling, crazy Florida-Tennessee finish and some of the Clemson-Louisville game, but that's about it.
Good for you and Jane.
It was nice to not have to worry about things, but also you start to get a little bit of a scratch when you've been away from football too long.
Understood.
So did get to see some of the Sunday night football game, the NFL game, the Falcons and the Packers. Yeah. But that's about it.
I confess to last September when my godson got married on a football Saturday, being at his very swanky reception in a tuxedo, checking my phone for highlights and scores.
Well, I will tell you that at the reception of the wedding, which was on a Saturday night, there may have been an announcement to those in attendance in Macon, Georgia, that if you would like to watch the Georgia-Notre Dame game, it is on television upstairs.
There you go.
So I was clued in that Saturday. It was just where there is no reception in the National Park System out west. But quite an eventful weekend, though.
It was.
You'll talk to Normwood in a few seconds about Virginia Tech and East Carolina, mm-hmm. looking ahead to Old Dominion.
Yep. Not sure there's much to look ahead to there, but yes.
Unless they are looking too forward ahead, I guess.
Yeah.
But before we get into that, now sure. We're a few weeks into the ACC season or to the college football season. I know there are still teams playing plenty of non-conference games. What's one or two things that you feel pretty certain of this point in the season?
Clemson's defense. Jonathan, they just reload. I went back and looked. They have lost, in the last 3 years, 12 NFL draft choices. And they continue to excel. They smothered Auburn 2 weeks ago. And then last week defended Lamar Jackson about as well as you can. Louisville had the one, I think it was 95-yard drive in the first or second quarter. But after that, they got nothing, and Clemson's defense even scored. Dorian O'Daniel, the linebacker, has a pick six, and Brent Venables' group is really, really good.
Jackson had put up eye-popping numbers the first few weeks of the season.
And against Clemson last year.
Right, yeah, and that was a shootout, right?
41-36.
So... obviously, you know, a great effort by that defense. At what point, and I know he's been mentioned for jobs before, and everybody wants the right job, but at what point, how much longer does Brent Venables stay at Clemson?
Well, when you're making 1-4 or 1-5 as a coordinator, you have a lot of reasons to stay.
That's more than you get at some mid-majors
right.
as a head coach.
And I don't know if you've ever been to Pickens County, South Carolina, but I'm telling you, 1-4, 1-5 goes a long ways.
You're sure that Clemson's defense, after seeing them for a few weeks, is pretty good.
Yep.
They have to be the favorites, right?
They are, but you know, the schedule is difficult. Still Florida State ahead, still Virginia Tech in 2 weeks. So I don't think by any stretch that they're going to, you know, just kick it into cruise control. The ACC is not that kind of league anymore, where back in the day Florida State literally could cruise to the league championship. So and I think what else we're fairly sure of or certain of is that Virginia Tech chose its quarterback wisely for the second consecutive year. You know, last year Justin Fuente settled on Gerard Evans, the junior college transfer. He goes out and has a record-setting year, and they win 10 games, and they're in the ACC title contest. This year, Josh Jackson, the redshirt freshman, he's thrown 85 passes, 8 for touchdowns, no picks. That's about as efficient as you could hope for. Now, granted, Delaware in week 2, FCS. East Carolina last week, that's a bad football team. But they were down 10 on the road, Kid didn't blink. He was fine.
And what we go back to the first episode of this podcast. That's the one thing we talked about is, you know, take care of the football, mm-hmm. you know, be a game manager if you have to, and he's been more than that.
Oh, absolutely. No, he's made plays with both his arm and his feet. He's been terrific.
What don't you know about the ACC right now?
Florida State and Miami, right? They'll play this week for the first time in 21 days because of Irma. And you just don't know what that kind of – number one, what that layoff does, but more importantly, what those young men, a lion's share of whom are from Florida, have roots in that area. You know, how has the storm and its aftermath affected them, their families, where are their minds? You know, this is real world stuff, and now all of a sudden it's back to football, and it's back to conference games now. And I'm going to be fascinated to watch those two teams this week.
All right, we'll come back to Florida State and Miami after you talk to Norm.
Norm, we have just witnessed the most lopsided Virginia Tech road victory since 2001 at Rutgers. The score here at East Carolina today, 64-17. Are the Hokies that good, or are the Pirates just that awful?
That's a great question, because I was talking with someone on the way down the field, I was talking with Aaron Beard, the North Carolina AP writer here.
Yeah, good guy. Like
really
Aaron.
Good dude. And he mentioned the fact, do we really know how good Tech is? I mean, yeah, they had a really,
really
nice win against West Virginia to start the season. No question. That was a great win. But then they come back with the lackluster win against an FCS team that went 4-7 last season and still trying to get a turnaround. And now they win this game here today against just an awful ECU team, pretty much in all facets. And, you know, you mentioned the 50-0 win against Rutgers, which was this is the largest, the biggest margin of victory for Virginia Tech on the road since then, and you know, they scored 50 points that game against Rutgers, and today they reeled off 50 unanswered points.
57 right?
Unanswered points.
They're down.
That's right. They're down 17-7, and it winds up 64-17.
Yeah.
So just craziness, man.
And look, East Carolina's defense is horrible. I can see why they fired the defensive coordinator after the losses to James Madison. And to West Virginia, but they might have been worse today. I mean, the cushions they were giving Tech receivers, and then they still let him get by him deep. I mean, Cam Phillips was running by himself. Trayvon McMillan going down the seam is wide open. That is some poor defense. And you know, to think, yes, it was the first quarter. And yes, that defense is awful, but I continue to be impressed in Justin Fuente's short time at Tech and how calm his teams remain even when down by significant margins.
It's sort of a reflection of him, though.
Yes,
you know?
He's so...
Very stoic.
So stoic on the sideline and so calm. And I think that type of approach, that's why they were able to come from 17 down at Notre Dame last season, down 24-0 in the Belk to Arkansas and win. And granted, now today doesn't compare to those, but
and pull it out against West Virginia when it was tight, you know. I mean,
yes,
overcame
a deficit last year at Pitt, a big road win that was a key to the. To the Coastal Division title. I like the way this team plays under adversity, or these teams have played under adversity. And I keep reminding myself, you watch the kid, Josh Jackson is a freshman.
Yeah.
And he's thrown 85 passes. He's yet to throw a pick.
8-0 touchdown to interception ratio in 3 games. That's
right.
Pretty good.
Yeah, and today
you mentioned your quarterback rating stat in the column.
Yeah, and Michael Vick set what was then a freshman record for quarterback efficiency, passing efficiency in 1999. think it was 179 and change. Well, Josh Jackson is sitting there right now at 177 and change, and today he threw for a Tech freshman record, 372.
Yeah.
Excuse me, and five touchdowns, which matches Gerard Evans' school record for a regulation game. I mean, the kid, what did Fuente say after the game? I just like the way the kid goes about his business.
Yeah, he's a lot, as you said, you know, he's a lot like Fuente himself, you know, with a very calm exterior. And let's check back in a couple weeks, and we talked, you know, about we've played up that Clemson game so much now, but let's check back with the quarterback rating a couple weeks after the Clemson game. But no denying at all that this is an unbelievable start for Jackson. You talked about ECU's defense early on and the fact that they give 9-10 yard cushions to, you know, receivers and let Cam Phillips have the game of a lifetime today with, you know, school record 14 catches. And Cam, after the game, and I asked him about the cushion that they were giving him, especially in the first half, and he said, yeah, man, I was really surprised. He says, it got to the point where I was catching balls and I was just running out of bounds because I had so much room off the line of scrimmage. I just figured I had to have somebody on my back when I caught a pass with my back to a defender. And he said, I'd step out of bounds and I'd turn around and the guy was still off me. Like, he says, I didn't know what was going on, he said. But it was a really, you know, it's ill-conceived to play 9-10 yards off almost every single play in the first half. And Robert Prunty, the former Hargrave Military Academy coach, has a lot of ground to make up with this defense at ECU.
Yeah, he sure does. And you mentioned Cam Phillips, school record, 14 catches today, career high, .189, catches three touchdown passes. I don't know anyone who's been around the Virginia Tech program for more than a cup of coffee who doesn't think the world of that young man.
For sure. Yeah, and now his versatility is really showing that he's...
Yeah, with Ford and Hodges gone.
You know, he was sort of forced to learn how to play both the slot and on the perimeter, and he was welcome to it. I mean, it's sort of the next step in his progression, and, man, he's really grasped that concept, and it seems like he did a lot of that damage today on the perimeter. But, man, it's when they're clicking, I mean, and Jackson's got time, which he had a ton of it today.
Was he sacked?
I don't know. I don't recall.
No, I think one. I remember one.
Yeah?
Yep, one
sack.
Or actually two. One for 11 yards.
Yeah, so one for 11 yards out of 95 plays, which also tied a school record for play. You know, I mean, it's just, it's a pretty dominant performance again, but you have to take it with a grain of salt when you just look at how horrible ECU is, and it's not going to get much more challenging next week against ODU, you would figure. I mean, we were talking before we started this little podcast here about just how depleted ODU was.
Yeah, we'll get to the Monarchs in a second, and it could be a similar number in Blacksburg next Saturday. I wanted to talk a little bit about Tech's running attack, more specifically the tailbacks today. Again, with the East Carolina disclaimer, James Madison ran all over them. I think Cardin Johnson, the tailback from Warwick High School, went for 267, maybe at touchdown runs of 80 and 85 yards on this very field in the season opener a couple weeks back. But today, you know, Trayvon McMillian, he got loose. He averaged, 6.5 yards a carry.
Yeah.
McLeese averaged 5 yards a pop. And then, granted, in garbage time, A.J. Bush from the quarterback position, that's not the issue for Tech. It's been a tailback, but he gets loose for 66. But I thought the running game certainly showed more than it did last week against Delaware when the number was 81 yards total.
Right, 81 on 28 carries. And, of course, Delaware was set up to stop the run, but come on, it's Delaware, you know? I mean,
right.
So they kind of got back, and a lot of it was, like you mentioned, garbage time, you know, getting a lot of guys in. But they did, you know, some of what they did last year early on, which is getting a lot of bodies in the game. And they went extremely deep today, even getting Coleman Fox in there, you know, getting him a touchdown late. And but, you know, early on, they had a really nice rotation with the three guys that they've clearly sort of decided that they're going to depend on right now. They don't really have many options, but this is a decent three-headed attack when they're clicking and when they're getting some nice run blocking up front with McMillan and McLeese and Peoples, and those three guys together had 30 carries for, I don't know, it looks like 53 yards. So, you know, that's a pretty good number. You know, you're averaging, what, 5 yards, over 5 yards a carry there. So, and they run for 287 yards of the team and 4.6 yards a carry. And I mentioned earlier this week in a story, it was a story I wrote about the fact that they've been a little inconsistent with their running game. And Fuente, to his credit, has mentioned that. He mentioned that after the West Virginia game where they had a nice number. And a lot of that was supplemented by the 101 or 111 yards that Jackson had, you know, and he hasn't gotten loose like he did in that game since then. So, obviously, the 81 yards last week against Delaware is disappointing. So, maybe this is a little bit of, you know, getting them charged up and fired up again with that rushing attack with McMillan and McLeese and Peoples and Holston, too. Holston got in there, got 10 carries for 39 yards late. So, mm-hmm.
East Carolina today, 204 yards on 18 first quarter plays.
77. In the last three quarters.
On 41 snaps.
Yeah.
43 snaps, excuse me. We've grown accustomed, to say the least, to Bud Foster adjustments, and clearly he did so again. What were your impressions of how Tech's secondary played, especially with Adonis Alexander being left at home for reasons yet unexplained?
Yeah. Got better as the game went along, and I think obviously a lot of that is because you're able to kind of, as Bud likes to say, pin your ears back and get after a guy. And, and they did that some. They didn't get a lot of sacks, but they got a lot of pressure on him and made life difficult. And that obviously makes life easier for the secondary. And they were a little shaky early on. I mean, Stroman gave up a touchdown pass to Kings Fork graduate Davon Gray, is that his name?
Grayson,
yeah.
Yep.
Davon Grayson, where Stroman got beat on a quick slant. That's been an issue for Tech cornerbacks this season. Adonis Alexander gave up a couple of big plays, a fourth down conversion and a touchdown pass against West Virginia on quick slants. And but you know, Stroman comes back in the second quarter with an interception that sets up a field goal. And you know, like I said, in the second half, you kind of get to see a little bit more of Tech and kind of cruise control. But I do think that there has to be some concern there. Faison looked very shaky early on.
I agree.
Especially working on the perimeter against guys and left a lot of guys sort of with nobody around him and kind of got lost. And then, you know, like you said, you got to see where you're at with Faison. I did not notice much, if any, of Hampton High graduate Jovan Quillen out there today. He's a guy that's sort of challenging for that fourth cornerback spot. Mm-hmm. If Alexander's gone, you know, we don't know. I mean, if he's gone for a little bit of time, that he's going to play a bigger role there, and they've got Bryce Watts as their, you know, sort of, again, competing with Quillen for that fourth spot. So, but Stroman, I think he's got to play better overall, but it's hard to argue, you know, with the results today when you look at just how many, you know, giving up 77 yards as a team, you know, in the second and then in the last three quarters and getting that pick. So, but he's going to have to play sharper when they get down the road here against Clemson in a couple of weeks, for example.
Yeah. Well, and after Reggie Floyd gave up that one deep one, they kind of
a little late.
Moved him out of there and brought Diablo in and played him more. Gardner Minshew, the ECU quarterback, hit 7 of his first 10 without a pick and 2 touchdowns. He was 4 for his last 20.
Wow.
Yeah. With a pick.
I mean, the game just changed there in the second quarter.
Yeah, just suffocated him.
I mean, for the 9, I've looked it up, and 9 of ECU's last 11 drives, they failed to cross their own 42-yard line. So, you know, and really only threatened once, I think, in the last three quarters.
Well, we talked after the West Virginia game. This team's going to be 4-0 going into Clemson, and it sure looks that way, because up next is Saturday against Old Dominion.
And I'll be honest. I mean, heck, I wrote a column earlier in the week, and I look like a fool, basically saying this was Old Dominion's best chance to date against a Power Five. They were 0-7, 0-6 against the ACC, and 0-1 against the SEC. And I really thought, and none of them particularly close, but
against, at least it wasn't 80-20 today.
Right, at halftime
it
I wondered
like it was going
to
be. Right?
It was 39-7, and you're playing at home against the Tar Heels, and they just got bushwhacked. And I'll tell you what, I was reading our friend Ed Miller's quick count in the Virginian Pilot, and it looks like Ray Lowry, by far Old Dominion's best running back, maybe done for the year with a torn hamstring. They've already lost their best receiver, Jonathan Duhart, for the year to a foot. Their offensive line is banged up, and the offense was so bad in the first half today with Blake LaRussa and Jordan Hoy at quarterback that in the second half, Bobby Wilder went with the true freshman, Stephen Williams. And, you know, the final was 53-23. Obviously, Fedora took his foot off the gas. He didn't want an 80-20 situation
again.
But, you know, now Old Dominion's got to – they got to take that show on the road to Blacksburg in the first of what is going to be a very long series. They played 13 times in the next 15 years, including 10 straight from 2022 to 31, but I fear, just for the sake of drama and intrigue, that the first edition of this rivalry is not going to offer us much.
I mean, we were talking, I guess, late in the third quarter of today's game here in Greenville with noted Vegas line watcher Aaron McFarlane from Roanoke Times, and we asked him, you know, what do we think the line's going to be?
The number
he said
be?
35 points. He said he wouldn't be surprised if it was 35 points in that game next week against ODU. I mean, that just seems unbelievable to me that we're talking about that at this point. I mean, I guess if you're ODU, you hope that Tech somehow maybe takes their foot off the gas like they did last week, you know, against Delaware, and you know, maybe ODU can take advantage of some of those early opportunities that Tech has a tendency to give up, it seems like. I mean, today, you know, there was, you know, ECU built a 10-point lead, and Delaware had chances early last week, and ODU's got to take advantage of some of those. But judging from what you're saying, I didn't keep up with that game much today, but from judging what they're saying, it just doesn't seem like there's much hope of that.
Yeah, so. And it'll be interesting. I had a sit down with Old Dominion's athletic director, Wood Sealing, on Friday, and I asked him. I said, you know, what's the excitement level for Old Dominion fans to go to Virginia Tech? Yes, you've played North Carolina. You've played NC State. You've played Pittsburgh. You've played Maryland. But this is in state, and this is the premier program in your state. And his remark was, I think we're taking half the city in Norfolk. I wonder what the attitude will be now, how discouraged their fans might be in terms of still wanting to drive 300 plus miles for what may, you know, unless Virginia Tech starts turning it over, which they have not shown a penchant for. And unless Old Dominion finds an offense that it has yet to show this season, it is really difficult. And I know Tech's going to be maybe gazing ahead a little bit to Clemson in that Week 5 game. But I think half 100 is, you know, we'll have to go back in the book and see the last time they've scored 50-plus in back-to-back weeks against FBS teams. But
I mean, it's, you know, it's like you said. I mean, I go back to my original, you know, one of the original points I made here is, even if they do crush ODU, do we know what kind of team Tech is heading into Clemson? I mean,
nope.
They will have three very impressive wins with West Virginia and ECU, and if they do what we expect them to do against ODU, and then taking care of business against Delaware, it was lackluster, but I don't know, do you get the sense that we know what the team is all about? We'll see, obviously, next week. Still got to play that game, so.
Yep. 2 o'clock kick.
Yeah.
We like
that. These mid-afternoon games.
We like that for deadline purposes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I look forward, and we are going to be triple team in that puppy next week. Dave Johnson, our esteemed Old Dominion writer, will be with us in the press box, so we'll have it blanketed during the week and on game day from Lane Stadium. So we'll see you then, bro.
One last point I got to make.
Do it,
people. I know you love Inner Sandman. I get it, and I was poking the bear a little bit today on Twitter with that. But you guys, listen, it's awesome. There's nothing wrong with it. I didn't say I hated it. I mean, you know, you guys, this is the thing. In 18 seasons of covering Virginia Tech football, that means I've probably seen Inner Sandman over 100 times now. I was there for the first time they did it.
Right.
And I've been there since all the way through and only missed a few games when I had to go cover UVA on those weekends. Give me a break. It's a great tradition, just not my favorite one. And what, do you care about my opinion regarding Inner Sandman? I sure hope not. Come on.
And Purple Haze is,
yeah.
I'm a Hendrix guy.
Yeah, you're balancing Hendrix and Metallica. Both, I love Hendrix and I love Metallica. I was in the Snake Pit in 1992 back at the Hampton Coliseum to see those guys. But
there you go.
Come on. I'm taking Hendrix every day over James Hetfield and Kirk Hammett and the boys.
Did we drug test that day? Did you were at Metallica?
I was 17 years old. I hope nobody drug tested me that day.
All right, man. We'll see you on Saturday.
Yeah. All right. So just before we went to your conversation with Norm about Virginia Tech, we were talking about Florida State and Miami. So Miami has Toledo this week. Toledo's undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
They've been a team that's been pretty decent in recent years. I know that's a tough task for them to go to Miami, but we will. I think it will be interesting to see how Miami reacts to the layoffs or the long layoff, like you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
and to continue to discover what kind of quarterback play they're going to get.
Exactly. Miami crushes Bethune-Cookman in the season opener. That's an FCS opponent. What can you read into that? What kind of quarterback is Malik Rozier going to be through for more than 200 yards? In that game, but now you look. You mentioned undefeated Toledo. Then they get presently undefeated Duke on the road. Now, hey, Wallace Wade is hardly a Lions Den, but Cutcliffe can coach, and
he sure can.
And Duke has a quarterback in Daniel Jones. And then after that comes the rescheduled game at Florida State.
Yeah,
and then a home game against Georgia Tech in the option. So the next 4 weeks, and we're going to find out a whole lot about the Hurricanes, who, by the way, you know, is as much buzz as we give Virginia Tech, and rightfully so, the way they've started. You know, the Hurricanes were the consensus to win the Coastal.
Florida State also had some time off because of the Hurricane. They host NC State. Now, they don't have a their starting quarterback to start the season.
Right, DeAndre Francois
is out for the rest of the year, so that's gone.
Mm-hmm. Hello, State, James Blackman.
Right, and NC State is a quick comeback at the end away against South Carolina from being undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
This should be a test for Florida State.
It will be, and North Carolina State historically has given Florida State fits. The Wolfpack has a quality quarterback in Ryan Finley, who's in his second year. As the starter there, Jalen Samuels is this hybrid guy who can do everything, run, catch, block. He'll be a real challenge for Florida State's defensive front, for their linebackers, for their secondary. And NC State, other than Clemson and Florida State, you make the argument that North Carolina State has the best defensive front in the league, led by Bradley Chubb.
Be a top NFL draft pick, probably.
He'll absolutely be a first-round draft choice. And all of a sudden, you're saying to a true freshman in James Blackman, now, yeah, you've got a taste against Alabama, but now you're the starter.
you're the point man, and you're facing a pretty capable defense, albeit at home. You know, for mm-hmm. you know, that's an advantage that say Stevie Williams of Old Dominion, he's not going to have this week. His first career start is going to be on the road in Blacksburg, but at least for the Seminoles' sake, Blackman will be at home.
Florida State's defense is good.
Oh,
I mean, they've got one of the best players in the country.
Derwin James.
I mean, he's considered a Heisman contender. And, you know, we both know how rare that is for a defensive player to be in that discussion. They've got a ballyhooed freshman running back and another running back. I imagine they're going to try to lean on the running game and play good defense.
Yeah, and not ask too much of Blackman. You mentioned Jacquez Patrick. Who's the veteran running back and who gets the start. But then you have Cam Akers, the renowned freshman, five stars. If there were six stars, he probably would have gotten the sixth. He was as heralded as they come by. You know, Florida State, if they can get by North Carolina State, you know, then they go to Wake Forest next week, and no offense to the
undefeated
undefeated Demon Deacons. But then, you know, then you're home to Miami, and you're at Duke and Louisville, and you're right into the meat of the schedule.
You mentioned Wake. They're at Appalachian State this week. They're undefeated. They go back to the bowl game against Temple. They have won four in a row. But their wins this year against Presbyterian, Boston College, and Utah State. After this game,
right,
they have Florida State,
correct,
Clemson,
mm-hmm,
Georgia Tech, Louisville, Notre Dame, Syracuse, NC State, and Duke.
Right. That five game stretch: Florida State, Clemson, Georgia Tech, Louisville, Notre Dame. Three of them on the road. I mean, the Deacons better win this week to get to 4-0, and then worry about getting Syracuse, State, and they're not going to win any of the next five.
You know, it's
they're funny. Just not.
I will say this about the ACC, and perhaps this is one of those things that come to you as you realize that the league is getting better from a depth perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You start to look at schedules, and we've done this the past few weeks, and we're doing it this week. When you look ahead, there's not a whole lot of easy wins mm-hmm. in the ACC. I mean, Syracuse is not is by no means an easy win, right?
Well, Virginia Tech found that out last year at the Carrier Dome, but the Orange has struggled thus far. They may be even worse than I would have thought.
But they'll be in the mix to be one of those 6-6 type teams, right? Maybe have a chance at a bowl. Wake could possibly go 6-6.
Oh, I think Wake will.
Yeah.
Managed to get to 6-6.
Outside of, it seems like at the bottom level is Boston College, right, mm-hmm. in Virginia. And then there's a lot of teams jockeying for that middle ground, I think.
Yeah, and hey, look, I was hard on Virginia after the Indiana game because the Cavaliers were awful. But they were much better on Saturday against Connecticut. Now it's Connecticut. So in essence, what Virginia has done in opening 2-1 is beat the two worst teams on its schedule. So now you really start to find out, starting Friday night, out in Boise against the Broncos.
Now, if they could beat Boise State, next week we'll come on here and I'll say that I was wrong and that they're in that pack.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough task to go out there and win at Boise.
It is, especially on a short week, having played on Saturday. And you have to travel out west. Virginia is, you know, we're taping this on Wednesday. Virginia is flying out today. Just to get acclimated to the time change. And, you know, Boise has Brett Rippon, a quarterback. He's been dinged up a little bit. He played against UVA as a true freshman and just tore him up in Charlottesville. I remember covering that game. As a matter of fact, I'm sitting here reading the game notes, and it was Rippon's first career start.
Son of
Nephew.
Nephew of former Redskins quarterback Mark Rippon.
Yes, exactly. But, yeah, it'd be a huge win for Virginia. I mean, Boise went triple overtime with Mike Leach in Washington State before losing on the road. You know, it wasn't very impressive last week against New Mexico. I saw some bits and pieces of that game. What's curious Jonathan, are interesting to me about Virginia in short weeks is that Bronco Mendenhall is so principled and devout in his faith that short week or not, he's not coming to the office on Sunday. And he doesn't want his coaches in there on Sunday. And he's not meeting with his team on Sunday. And that's, he said, everything will be, you know, compressed this week because of the Friday game. But he said on Sunday, he went to church, went by the training room to see who was in there to check on them, did not go upstairs to the office, and went home.
Perhaps one of the high points that UVA can see this week is this Boise State isn't the Chris Peterson Boise State teams. They're not a contender, you know, to be a team that slips in to one of the big bowls.
I don't think it is, just based on early returns. But yeah, and hey, like many programs out there, Boise's had attendance issues. You know, everybody talks about the blue turf and all that, and the atmosphere out there. They're not getting the crowds they used to in the enthusiasm. So yes, and let's not forget also, this is Virginia's first road game. You know, when you get to open up with three at home, you get comfortable. It's the first time they may be a little uncomfortable.
Well, it'll be an interesting game, and sure we'll be able to talk a lot about that next week, even though it will be feeling a day older than the other games. A couple other games around the ACC, Duke, North Carolina. Duke is undefeated. Mm-hmm. Are they now in the top half, or are they still? Do they still need to prove a little bit more to be up there?
I underestimated Duke. At least it sure appears that I did. I picked them sixth out of seven in the Coastal, ahead of only UVA. But you know, Northwestern was kind of a trendy pick to win its side in the Big Ten,
as I refer to as the junior varsity.
Yeah, and Duke just cuffed them around a few weeks back, and then returned last week and beat obviously depleted Baylor. Poor Matt Rhule, he's got a mess on his hands in Waco, but he probably knew that when he took the gig. But yeah, I think Duke is right there. I'm real interested in, first of all, a September Duke Carolina game this is the earliest they've ever played. I mean, this is usually Thanksgiving weekend type fare. So to have them playing in September is disconcerting. Very interested to see how the Tar Heels and Blue Devils turn out. And you know, North Carolina had a very solid effort. I didn't think they'd beat Old Dominion by 30 in Norfolk last week. But, you know, that game was 39-7 at halftime, and you're thinking, you know, here's 80-20 all over again from 2014 in Chapel Hill.
They are, what, now
1-2.
1-2.
Opened with Cal and Louisville at home, lost them both.
Those are – the Cal – loss is not a great one. Louisville, you know, is considered to be one of the better teams in the league. Mm-hmm. If they fall to 1-3, I wouldn't imagine that Larry Fedora is any sort of hot.
I don't think so. And you know, they've struggled defensively while he's been there. He's obviously a terrific offensive mind, but yeah, they're not going to let him go.
He's a very good coach.
He absolutely is.
We mentioned Wake and App State. I mean, Wake should win that game. And then the schedule gets much tougher. Pitt and Georgia Tech.
Pitt's a mess right now defensively. Can't stop anybody. Well, I say anybody. When you play Penn State and Oklahoma State back-to-back weeks, that's a tough ask. And now you go from playing Oklahoma State and just – you know, Mason Rudolph throwing everywhere on you, and now on a typical week, you don't have any extra preparation time. You have to turn around and play the option on the road. That's about as jarring a transition as you can imagine for a defensive team. And I just don't see Pitt being able to handle it. I think Georgia Tech's going to win that game.
I think they're going to win too, but it seems like every year there's one game where Georgia Tech is surprised and they lose a game they shouldn't. And a lot of times, as we mentioned earlier, it's off a bye week. They will have no such worry this week. But I think it could be closer than you think.
I like the Jackets.
You talked to Norm about ODU, Virginia Tech. I know we're getting ahead of ourselves to talk about Virginia Tech Clemson next week, but that is shaping up, particularly if Florida State can't rebound from Francois's injury, as the premier game in the ACC this year, maybe.
It absolutely could be, and it, from all appearances, game day is coming. You know, it's the 8 o'clock ABC game, and you know, you look at the rest of the schedule nationally, and I fully anticipate that game day will be there. Be the first time they've been since the opener in 2007.
Wow.
Yeah, when they were there for the first football game on campus after the tragedy of that April. It was Virginia Tech East Carolina. It was kind of a nothing game, but they were there for the pathos. But no, Virginia Tech Clemson's going to, we mentioned Brent Venables earlier, it's going to be the two best defensive coordinators in the country, right? Brent Venables, Bud Foster.
Certainly distinguished. And then have proved themselves very, very adept at running defenses over the years.
Yeah, and long term, and in Venables' case, at multiple schools,
multiple big schools.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't think. I mean, I have written down Syracuse, LSU. Syracuse is 2-1. Like you said, they've struggled some. LSU looked completely terrible against Mississippi State. They continue to have quarterback issues. Mm-hmm. They've had now for a long time. I mean, they probably would have contended for a national championship with some of those defenses if they had a better quarterback. Any chance that Syracuse keeps
goes to Death Valley now?
Not so much.
No. In a word, no.
Anything else that stands out? Again, I've said at the top of the episode, I've missed a little football. So is there any surprise Heisman contenders that have jumped into the race? Saquon Barkley certainly looks pretty strong.
He does, and but it's early, and you know, there's so many players out there doing well in the September portions of their schedule. Some against really stout competition.
Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, he's absolutely in the mix, along with Baker Mayfield. I mean, how good could Bedlam be this year?
It was crazy.
You could have Bedlam 1 and then Bedlam 2 in the Big 12 championship game.
What's crazy is that Baker Mayfield, who was a finalist last year, mm-hmm. Lamar Jackson, who won it last year, both those guys, you know, maybe weren't talked about a lot. Now, we mentioned Jackson a few weeks ago, the way they finished last year, and Mayfield had some off-the-field stuff, but it was a little early to write those two guys off.
Yeah, they're playing great, and hey, you know, Sam Darnold at USC did not have a great game against Texas, but when he had to be great, he was taking them down the field for that tying field goal, 38 seconds, no timeouts, and it looks like they're going to lose it at home to Texas. Would have been a really, really debilitating blow to the Trojans' playoff hopes, but no, he takes them down, and then the freshman walk-on kicks the game-tying and game-winning field goal then in the second overtime. That was great stuff. I got home just in time from Greenville I was listening to it on sat radio, and then got in the living room in time to watch the extra sessions. That was fabulous stuff.
And Rosen put up really big numbers. I mean, that's a bad loss against Memphis, but he put up good numbers again.
He did. He's playing very well. And it was funny. I asked Justin Fuente after the Tech East Carolina game. I said, "Did you notice that score at Memphis?" He just let me. He said, "They won, didn't they?" I said, "Yes, sir, they did." So he did not leave the cupboard bare in Memphis by any stretch of the imagination. I think that's a credit to him and his staff, and it shows that even if he had not taken the Virginia Tech job, that program was going to continue to progress.
It was a game like that, I feel like, against Ole Miss maybe when he was at Memphis, mm-hmm. that put them on the map, kind of.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And Ole Miss is correct.
Yeah. Well, this weekend, I think the game that I'm most looking forward to seeing how it turns out is NC State, Florida State, to give some clarity, I think, at least in that division, or actually maybe making it even muckier. We'll have to see. Because right now, behind Clemson, you know, you'd imagine that Florida State's right there, but who knows?
Yeah, and Louisville's going to be in the mix simply because of that offense.
But NC State could be the team that throws the monkey wrench in there.
Maybe.
Need to see a little bit more.
I do. A lot of people were on the NC State hype train in preseason. I think at ESPN.
Picked them to win the division.
Well, picked them to be in the playoff.
In the playoff.
Yeah, which just struck me as... If not insane, then close, because we're talking about a team that lost to Boston College at home last year, and lost to an East Carolina team that went 3-9, and that is just demonstrably bad.
Yes, they are not a very good football team,
and weren't last year either.
I think also interesting is Clemson obviously has been very, very impressive. They're now ranked 2.
They are 2.
They have a difficult stretch. They had a difficult game last 2 weeks, Auburn and Louisville. Now they have Virginia Tech next week, Florida State later on in the season.
Yeah, it's November.
And then, you know, they have Georgia Tech, which don't think that's off a bye week. So, you know, Georgia Tech can give anybody trouble if you're playing them week to week. But... I think next week, and we already talked about it. To me, the Clemson Virginia Tech game is the highlight game in the ACC.
I mean, it absolutely could be, because you know Clemson gets Georgia Tech and Florida State in Death Valley.
Yeah.
So to me, this is going to be the Tigers' toughest road test, and Lane Stadium at night, that joint is gonna jump. And it, you know, I've seen Virginia Tech, you know, that crowd fuel the Hokies. I've also seen, you know, teams come in there and just take the crowd right out of it. I mean, there's that initial burst, and you know, Clemson's accustomed to this big stage, bright lights, away from home, be it neutral site or on the road. They've won in Tallahassee, they've won at Louisville, they've won at Auburn. They've beaten Ohio State on neutral fields, so Dabo's bunch is not going to be fazed by Enter Sandman or any of the surrounding noise.
I know we'll talk about this next week, but I do want to ask you. You've probably seen a little bit of their games the last 2 weeks. Clemson, Kelly Bryant looked great week one. Have you seen some holes or are there some?
No, I think they're really good. And I think his wideouts are, you know, Deion Kane's exceptional, and Hunter Renfro, who caught the game-winning touchdown pass from Deshaun Watson against Alabama last season. He's really solid. They're kind of a revolving door at tailback, but they've got athletes there. Their offensive line is really good. They struggled a little bit against Auburn. But they looked much better last week, and they're going to be fine.
Well, we will see. We've got some good games this week, but it all seems like table setting
for next week.
Next week.
It's going to be awesome, man.
All right, thanks, David.
Absolutely.